and she especially attacked the striking down in 2013 of Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act in Shelby County versus Holder, on the supposition that racism had waned enough to discard it. That, she wrote, was like throwing away your umbrella in a rainstorm because you were not getting wet. Being contrary, she needed to be extra sharp. She took pride in the speed with which she wrote opinions, and in their clarity. Twice a week, she lifted weights, did push-ups, and generally honed herself into a lean, Armani-clad contender. In oral argument, she liked to leap in first, keen to establish at the start whether the plaintiff had really been damaged or not. Her shy, soft, pause-filled delivery off the bench really speeded up then to Brooklyn fast. She often announced her dissents orally from the bench to show how much she disagreed, and in the trying 5 to 4 years, when she regularly led the dissenters, she made sure they spoke with one voice. On those days she wore her dissenting collar, a grey, stony, quietly menacing number. It fitted the occasion nicely. Yet she did not see herself as disruptive, let alone an activist. If she became more of a dissenter with the years, it was because the court, after 2006, swung over to the activist right. At heart, she was still what she had always been, a judicial minimalist. She was stunned by the lack of caution in the Roe v. Wade ruling of 1973 that legalized abortion. Though she certainly approved of the outcome, reform should have come through state legislatures, where it was slowly starting to appear. She was shocked, too, when the court, while upholding Obamacare, found it illegal under the Commerce Clause of the Constitution. That had been Congress's domain since the 1930s.